Naked Empire by Terry Goodkind. To Tom Doherty, always a champion in the struggle of good against evil. Chapter 1. You knew they were there, didn't you? Kaylin asked in a hushed tone as she leaned closer. Against the darkening sky, she could just make out the shapes of three black-tipped races, taking to wing, beginning their nightly hunt. That was why he'd stopped. That was what he'd been watching as the rest of them waited in uneasy silence. Yes, Richard said. He gestured over his shoulder without turning to look. There are two more back there. Kaylin briefly scanned the dark jumble of rock, but she didn't see any others. Lightly grasping the silver pommel with two fingers, Richard lifted his sword a few inches, checking that it was clear of its scabbard. A last fleeting glimmer of amber light played across his golden cape as he let the sword drop back in place. In the gathering gloom of dusk, his familiar, tall, powerful contour seemed as if it were no more than an apparition made of shadows. Just then, two more of the huge birds shot by right overhead. One, wings stretched wide, let out a piercing scream as it banked into a tight gliding turn, circling once in assessment of the five people below before stroking its powerful wings to catch its departing comrades in their swift journey west. This night, they would find ample food. Kaylin expected that as Richard watched them, he was thinking of the half-brother that until just recently he hadn't known existed. That brother now lay a hard day's travel to the west in a place so naked to the burning sun that few people ever ventured there. Fewer still ever returned. The searing heat, though, had not been the worst of it. Beyond those desolate lowlands, the dying light silhouetted a remote rim of mountains, making them look as if they had been charred black by the furnace of the underworld itself. As dark as those mountains, as implacable as perilous, the flight of five pursued the departing light. Jensen, standing to the far side of Richard, watched in astonishment. "What in the world?" "Black-tipped races," Richard said. Jensen mulled over the unfamiliar name. "I've often watched hawks and falcons and such," she said at last. "But I've never seen any birds of prey that hunt at night other than owls, and these aren't owls." As Richard watched the races, he idly gathered small pebbles from the crumbling jut of rock beside him, rattling them in a loose fist. "I'd never seen them before either until I came down here. People we've spoken with say they began appearing only in the last year or two, depending on who's telling the story. Everyone agrees, though, that they never saw the races before then." "Last couple of years," Jensen wondered aloud. Almost against her will, Kaylin found herself recalling the stories they'd heard, the rumors, the whispered assertions. Richard cast the pebbles back down the hardpan trail. "I believe they're related to falcons." Jensen finally crouched to comfort her brown goat, Betty, pressing up against her skirts.
"They can't be falcons."
Betty's little white twins, usually either capering, suckling, or sleeping, now huddled mute beneath their mother's round belly.
"They're too big to be falcons. They're bigger than hawks, bigger than golden eagles. No falcon is that big."
Richard finally withdrew his glare from the birds and bent to help console the trembling twins. One, eager for reassurance, anxiously peered up at him, licking out its little pink tongue before deciding to rest a tiny black hoof in his palm. With a thumb, Richard stroked the kid's spindly, white-haired leg. A smile softened his features, as well as his voice. "Are you saying you choose not to see what you've just seen, then?" Jensen smoothed Betty's drooping ears.
"I guess the hair standing on end at the back of my neck must believe what I saw."
Richard rested his forearm across his knee as he glanced toward the grim horizon. "The races have sleek bodies with round heads and long pointed wings similar to all the falcons I've seen. Their tails often fan out when they soar, but otherwise are narrow in flight." Jensen nodded, seeming to recognize his description of relevant attributes. To Kaylin, a bird was a bird. These, though, with red streaks on their chests and crimson at the base of their flight feathers, she had come to recognize. "They're fast, powerful, and aggressive," Richard added. "I saw one easily chase down a prairie falcon and snatch it out of midair in its talons." Jensen looked to be struck speechless by such an account. Richard had grown up in the vast forests of Westland, and had gone on to be a woods guide. He knew a great deal about the outdoors and about animals. Such an upbringing seemed exotic to Kaylin,
who had grown up in a palace in the Midlands. She loved learning about nature from Richard, loved sharing his excitement over the wonders of the world of life. Of course, he had long since come to be more than a woods guide. It seemed a lifetime ago when she'd first met him in those woods of his, but in fact, it had only been a little more than 2.5 years. Now they were a long way from Richard's simple boyhood home or Caelan's grand childhood haunts. Had they a choice, they would choose to be in either place, or just about anywhere else, other than where they were. But at least they were together. After all she and Richard had been through, the dangers, the anguish, the heartache of losing friends and loved ones, Caelan jealously savored every moment with him, even if it was in the heart of enemy territory. In addition to only just finding out that he had a half-brother, they had also learned that Richard had a half-sister, Jensen. From what they had gathered since they'd met her the day before, she too had grown up in the woods. It was heartwarming to see her simple and sincere joy at having discovered a close relation with whom she had much in common. Only her fascination with her new big brother exceeded Jensen's wide-eyed curiosity about Caelan and her mysterious upbringing in the Confessor's Palace in the far-off city of Adendrill. Jensen had had a different mother than Richard, but the same brutal tyrant Darkin Rall had fathered them both. Jensen was younger, just past 20, with sky-blue eyes and ringlets of red hair down unto her shoulders. She had inherited some of Darkin Rall's cruelly perfect features, but her maternal heritage and guileless nature altered them into bewitching femininity. While Richard's raptor gaze attested to his Rall paternity, his countenance and his bearing so manifest in his gray eyes was uniquely his own. "I've seen falcons rip apart small animals," Jensen said. "I don't believe I much like thinking about a falcon that big, much less five of them together." Her goat, Betty, looked to share the sentiment. "We take turns standing watch at night," Caelan said, answering Jensen's unspoken fear. While that was hardly the only reason, it was enough. In the eerie silence, withering waves of heat rose from the lifeless rock all around. It had been an arduous day's journey out from the center of the valley wasteland and across the surrounding flat plain, but none of them complained about the brutal pace. The torturous heat, though, had left Caelan with a pounding headache. While she was dead tired, she knew that in recent days Richard had gotten far less sleep than any of the rest of them. She could read that exhaustion in his eyes, if not in his stride. Caelan realized then what it was that had her nerves so on edge. It was the silence. There were no yips of coyotes, no howls of distant wolves, no flutter of bats, no rustle of a raccoon, no soft scramble of a vole, not even the buzz and chirp of insects. In the past, when all those things went silent, it had meant potential danger. Here, it was dead silent because nothing lived in this place. No coyotes or wolves or bats or mice or even bugs. Few living things ever trespassed this barren land. Here, the night was as soundless as the stars. Despite the heat, the oppressive silence ran a chill shiver up through Caelan's shoulders. She peered off once more at the races, barely still visible against the violet blush of the western sky. They, too, would not stay long in this wasteland, where they did not belong. "Kind of unnerving to encounter such a menacing creature when you never even knew such a thing existed," Jensen said. She used her sleeve to wipe sweat from her brow as she changed the subject. "I've heard it said that a bird of prey wheeling over you at the beginning of a journey is a warning." Kara, until then content to remain silent, leaned in past Caelan. "Just let me get close enough and I'll pluck their wretched feathers." Long blonde hair pulled back into the traditional single braid of her profession framed Kara's heated expression. "We'll see how much of an omen they are then." Kara's glare turned as dark as the races whenever she saw the huge birds. Being swathed from head to foot in a protective layer of gauzy black cloth, as were all of them except Richard, only added to her intimidating presence. When Richard had unexpectedly inherited rule, he had been further surprised to discover that Kara and her sister Mord Sith were part of the legacy. Richard returned the little white kid to its watchful mother and stood, hooking his thumbs behind his multi-layered leather belt. At each wrist, wide leather-padded silver bands bearing linked rings and strange symbols seemed to gather and reflect what little light remained. I once had a hawk circle over me at the beginning of a journey. And what happened? Jensen asked earnestly, as if his pronouncement might settle once and for all the old superstition. Richard's smile widened into a grin. I ended up marrying Kaylin. Kara folded her arms. That only proves it was a warning for the Mother Confessor, not you, Lord Rawl. Richard's arm gently encircled Kaylin's waist. She smiled with him as she leaned against his embrace in answer to the wordless gesture. That journey had eventually brought them to be husband and wife seemed more astonishing than anything she would ever have dared dream. Women like her, confessors, dared not dream of love. Because of Richard, she had dared, and had gained it. Kaylin shuddered to think of the terrible time she had feared he was dead or worse. There had been so many times she had ached to be with him, to simply feel his warm touch, or to even be granted the mercy of knowing he was safe. Jensen glanced at Richard and Kaylin to see that neither took Kara's admonition as anything but fond heckling. Kaylin supposed that to a stranger, especially one from the land of Dahara, as was Jensen, Kara's jibes at Richard would defy reason. Guards did not bait their masters, especially when their master was the Lord Rawl, the master of Dahara. Protecting the Lord Rawl with their lives had always been the blind duty of the Mord Sith. In a perverse way, Kara's irreverence toward Richard was a celebration of her freedom, paid in homage to the one who had granted it. By free choice, the Mord Sith had decided to be Richard's closest protectors. They had given Richard no say in the matter. They often paid little heed to his orders unless they deemed them important enough. They were, after all, now free to pursue what was important to them, and what the Mord Sith considered important above all else was keeping Richard safe. Over time, Kara, their ever-present bodyguard, had gradually become like family. Now that family had unexpectedly grown. Jensen, for her part, was awestruck to find herself welcomed. From what they had so far learned, Jensen had grown up in hiding, always fearful that the former Lord Rawl, her father, would finally find her and murder her as he murdered any other ungifted offspring he found. Richard signaled to Tom and Friedrich, back with the wagon and horses, that they would stop for the night. Tom lifted an arm in acknowledgement and then set to unhitching his team. No longer able to see the races in the dark void of the western sky, Jensen turned back to Richard. I take it their feathers are tipped in black? Before Richard had a chance to answer, Kara spoke in a silken voice that was pure menace. They look like death itself drips from the tips of their feathers, like the keeper of the underworld has been using their wicked quills to write death warrants. Kara loathed seeing those birds anywhere near Richard or Kaylin. Kaylin shared the sentiment. Jensen's gaze fled Kara's heated expression. She redirected her suspicion to Richard. Are they causing you some kind of trouble? Kaylin pressed a fist to her abdomen against the ache of dread stirred by the question. Richard appraised Jensen's troubled eyes. The races are tracking us. Chapter 2. Jensen frowned. What? Richard gestured between Kaylin and himself. The races, they're tracking us. You mean they followed you out into this wasteland, and they're watching you, waiting to see if you'll die of thirst or something so they can pick your bones clean? Richard slowly shook his head. No, I mean they're following us, keeping track of where we are. I don't understand how you can possibly know. We know, Kara snapped. Her shapely form was as spare, as sleek, as aggressive-looking as the races themselves, and, swathed in the black garb of the nomadic people who sometimes traveled the outer fringes of the vast desert, just as sinister-looking. With the back of his hand against her shoulder, Richard gently eased Kara back as he went on. We were looking into it when Friedrich found us and told us about you. Jensen glanced over at the two men back with the wagon. The sharp sliver of moon floating above the black drape of distant mountains provided just enough light for Kaylin to see that Tom was working at removing the trace chains from his big draft horses, while Friedrich unsaddled the others. Jensen's gaze returned to search Richard's eyes. What have you been able to find out so far? We never had a chance to really find out much of anything. Oba, our surprise half-brother lying dead back there, kind of diverted our attention when he tried to kill us. Richard unhooked a water skin from his belt, but the races are still watching us. He handed Kaylin his water skin, since she had left hers hanging on her saddle. It had been hours since they had last stopped. She was tired from riding and weary from walking when they had needed to rest the horses. Kaylin lifted the water skin to her lips, only to be reacquainted with how bad hot water tasted. At least they had water. Without water, death came quickly in the unrelenting heat of the seemingly endless barren expanse around the forsaken place called the Pillars of Creation. Jensen slipped the strap of her water skin off her shoulder before hesitantly starting again.
"I know it's easy to misconstrue things. Look at how I was tricked into thinking you wanted to kill me just like Dark and Rawl had. I really believed it. And there were so many things that seemed to me to prove it. But I had it all wrong. I guess I was just so afraid it was true, I believed it."
Richard and Kaylin both knew it hadn't been Jensen's doing. She had merely been a means for others to get at Richard. But it had squandered precious time. Jensen took a long drink. Still grimacing at the taste of the water, she lifted the water skin toward the empty desert behind them.
"I mean, there isn't much alive out here. It might actually be that the races are hungry and are simply waiting to see if you die out here, and because they do keep watching and waiting, you've begun to think it's more."
She gave Richard a demure glance, bolstered by a smile, as if hoping to cloak the admonishment as a suggestion.
"Maybe that's all it really is."
"They aren't waiting to see if we die out here," Kaylin said, wanting to end the discussion so they could eat and Richard could get some sleep. "They were watching us before we had to come here. They've been watching us since we were back in the forests to the northeast. Now let's have some supper and..."
"But why? That's not the way birds behave. Why would they do that?"
"I think they're keeping track of us for someone," Richard said. "More precisely, I think someone is using them to hunt us." Kaylin had known various people in the Midlands, from simple people living in the wilds to nobles living in great cities, who hunted with falcons. This, though, was different. Even if she didn't fully understand Richard's meaning, much less the reasons for his conviction, she knew he hadn't meant it in the traditional sense. With abrupt realization, Jensen paused in the middle of another drink.
"That's why you've started scattering pebbles along the windblown places in the trail."
Richard smiled in confirmation. He took his water skin when Kaylin handed it back. Kara frowned up at him as he took a long drink.
"You've been throwing pebbles along the trail? Why?"
Jensen eagerly answered in his place.
"The open rock gets blown clean by the wind. He's been making sure that if anyone tries to sneak up on us in the dark, the pebbles strewn across those open patches will crunch underfoot and alert us."
Kara wrinkled a questioning brow at Richard.
"Really?"
He shrugged as he passed her his water skin, so that she wouldn't have to dig hers out from beneath her desert garb. "Just a little extra precaution in case anyone is close and careless. Sometimes people don't expect the simple things, and that catches them up."
"But not you,"
Jensen said, hooking the strap of her water skin back over her shoulder.
"You think of even the simple things."
Richard chuckled softly. "If you think I don't make mistakes, Jensen, you're wrong. While it's dangerous to assume that those who wish you harm are stupid, it can't hurt to spread out a little gravel just in case someone thinks they can sneak across windswept rock in the dark without being heard." Any trace of amusement faded as Richard stared off toward the western horizon where stars had yet to appear. "But I fear that pebbles strewn along the ground won't do any good for eyes watching from a dark sky." He turned back to Jensen, brightening, as if remembering he had been speaking to her. "Still, everyone makes mistakes." Kara wiped droplets of water from her sly smile as she handed Richard back his water skin.
"Lord Rawl is always making mistakes, especially simple ones. That's why he needs me around."
"Is that right, little Miss Perfect?" Richard chided as he snatched the water skin from her hand. "Maybe if you weren't helping keep me out of trouble, we wouldn't have black-tip races shadowing us."
"What else could I do?" Kara blurted out. "I was trying to help, to protect you both."
Her smile had withered.
"I'm sorry, Lord Rawl."
Richard sighed. "I know," he admitted as he reassuringly squeezed her shoulder. "We'll figure it out." Richard turned back to Jensen. "Everyone makes mistakes. How a person deals with their mistakes is a mark of their character." Jensen nodded as she thought it over.
"My mother was always afraid of making a mistake that would get us killed. She used to do things like you did in case my father's men were trying to sneak up on us. We always lived in forests, though, so it was dry twigs rather than pebbles that she often scattered around us. Jensen pulled on a ringlet of her hair as she stared off into dark memories. It was raining the night they came. If those men stepped on twigs, she wouldn't have been able to hear it. She ran trembling fingers over the silver hilt of the knife at her belt. They were big, and they surprised her, but still, she got one of them before they... Darkin Rawl had wanted Jensen dead because she had been born ungifted. Any ruler of that bloodline killed offspring such as she. Richard and Kalin believed that a person's life was their own to live, and that birth did not qualify that right. Jensen's haunted eyes turned up to Richard. She got one of them before they killed her. With one arm, Richard pulled Jensen into a tender embrace. They all understood such terrible loss. The man who had lovingly raised Richard had been killed by Darkin Rawl himself. Darkin Rawl had ordered the murders of all of Kalin's sister confessors. The men who had killed Jensen's mother, though, were men from the Imperial Order sent to trick her, to murder, in order to make her believe it was Richard who was after her. Kalin felt a forlorn wave of helplessness at all they faced. She knew what it was to be alone, afraid and overwhelmed by powerful men, filled with blind faith and the lust for blood, men devoutly believing that mankind's salvation required slaughter. "I'd give anything for her to know that it wasn't you who sent those men." Jensen's soft voice held the dejected sum of what it was to have suffered such a loss, to have no solution to the crushing solitude it left in its wake. "I wish my mother could have known the truth, known what you two are really like." "She's with the good spirits and finally at peace," Kalin whispered in sympathy, even if she now had reason to question the enduring validity of such things. Jensen nodded as she swiped her fingers across her cheek. "What mistake did you make, Kara?" she finally asked. Rather than be angered by the question, and perhaps because it had been asked in innocent empathy, Kara answered with quiet candor, "It has to do with that little problem we mentioned before." "You mean it's about the thing you want me to touch?" By the light of the moon's narrow crescent, Kalin could see Kara's scowl return. "And the sooner the better." Richard rubbed his fingertips across his brow. "I'm not so sure about that." Kalin, too, thought that Kara's notion was too simplistic. Kara threw her arms up. "But Lord Rawl, we can't just leave it." "Let's get camp set up before it's pitch dark," Richard said in quiet command. "What we need right now is food and sleep." For once, Kara saw the sense in his orders and didn't object. When he had earlier been out scouting alone, she had confided in Kalin that she was worried about how Richard looked and had suggested that since there were enough other people, they shouldn't wake him for a turn at watch that night. "I'll check the area," Kara said, "and make sure there aren't any more of those birds sitting on a rock watching us with those black eyes of theirs." Jensen peered around as if fearing that a black-tip race might swoop in out of the darkness. Richard countermanded Kara's plans with a dismissive shake of his head. "They're gone for now."
"You said they were tracking you." Jensen stroked Betty's neck when the goat nudged her, seeking comfort. The twins were still hiding under their mother's round belly. "I never saw them before now. They weren't around yesterday or today. They didn't show up until just this evening. If they really were tracking you, then they wouldn't be gone for such a stretch. They'd have to stick close to you all the time."
"They can leave us for a time in order to hunt, or to make us doubt our suspicion of their true intent. And even if we keep going, they can easily find us when they return. That's the advantage the black-tip races have. They don't need to watch us every moment." Jensen planted her fists on her hips.
"Then how in the world could you possibly be sure they're tracking you?"
She flicked a hand out toward the darkness beyond.
"You often see the same kinds of birds. You see ravens, sparrows, geese, finches, hummingbirds, doves. How do you know that any one of them aren't following you, and that the black-tipped races are?"
"I know," Richard said as he turned and started back toward the wagon. "Now let's get our things out and set up camp." Kalin caught Jensen's arm as she headed after him, about to renew her objections.
"Let him be for tonight, Jensen."
Kalin lifted an eyebrow.
"Please. About this, anyway."
Kalin was pretty sure that the black-tip races really were following them. But it wasn't so much an issue of her being sure of it herself. Rather, she had confidence in Richard's word in matters such as this. Kaylin was versed in affairs of state, protocol, ceremony, and royalty. She was familiar with various cultures, the origins of ancient disputes between lands, and the history of treaties. And she was conversant in any number of languages, including the duplicitous dialect of diplomacy. In such areas, Richard trusted her word when she expressed her conviction. In matters about something so odd as strange birds following them, she knew better than to question Richard's word. Kaylin knew, too, that he didn't yet have all the answers. She had seen him like this before, distant and withdrawn, as he struggled to understand the important connections and patterns in relevant details only he perceived. She knew that he needed to be left alone about it. Pestering him for answers before he had them only served to distract him from what he needed to do. Watching Richard's back as he walked away, Jensen finally forced a smile of agreement. Then, as if struck with another thought, her eyes widened. She leaned close to Kaylin and whispered, "Is this about magic?" "We don't know what it's about." Jensen nodded. "I'll help. Whatever I can do, I want to help." For the time being, Kaylin kept her worries to herself as she circled an arm around the young woman's shoulders in an appreciative embrace and walked her back toward the wagon. Chapter 3. In the immense silent void of night, Kaylin could clearly hear Friedrich off to the side speaking gently to the horses. He patted their shoulders or ran a hand along their flanks each time on his way by as he went about grooming and picketing them for the night. With darkness shrouding the empty expanse beyond, the familiar task of caring for the animals made the unfamiliar surroundings seem a little less forbidding. Friedrich was an older, unassuming man of average height. Despite his age, he had undertaken a long and difficult journey to the old world to find Richard. Friedrich had undertaken that journey, carrying with him important information soon after his wife had died. The terrible sadness of that loss still haunted his gentle features. Kaylin supposed that it always would. In the dim light, she saw Jensen smile as Tom looked her way. A boyish grin momentarily overcame the big blonde-headed Daharan when he spotted her, but he quickly bent back to work, pulling bedrolls from a corner beneath the seat. He stepped over supplies in his wagon and handed a load down to Richard. "There's no wood for a fire, Lord Rawl." Tom rested a foot on the chafing rail, laying a forearm over his bent knee. "But if you like, I have a little charcoal to use for cooking." "What I'd really like is for you to stop calling me Lord Rawl. If we're anywhere near the wrong people and you slip up and call me that, we'll all be in a great deal of trouble." Tom grinned and patted the ornate letter R on the silver handle of the knife at his belt. "Not to worry, Lord Rawl. Steel against steel." Richard sighed at the oft-repeated maxim involving the bond of the Daharan people to their Lord Rawl and he to them. Tom and Friedrich had promised they wouldn't use Richard's and Kaylin's titles around other people. A lifetime's habits were difficult to change, though, and Kaylin knew that they felt uncomfortable not using titles when they were so obviously alone. "So," Tom said as he handed down the last bedroll, "would you like a small fire for cooking?" "Hot as it seems to me we could do without any more heat." Richard set the bedrolls atop a sack of oats already unloaded. "Besides, I'd prefer not to take the time. I'd like to be on our way at first light, and we need to get a good rest." "Can't argue with you there," Tom said, straightening his big frame. "I don't like us being so out in the open where we could easily be spotted." Richard swept his hand in a suggestive arc across the dark vault above. Tom cast a wary eye skyward. He nodded reluctantly before turning back to the task of digging out tools to mend the breaching and wooden buckets to water the horses. Richard put a boot on a spoke of the cargo wagon's stout rear wheels and climbed up to help. Tom, a shy but cheerful man who had appeared only the day before, right after they'd encountered Jensen, looked to be a merchant who hauled trade goods. Hauling goods in his wagon, Kaylin and Richard had learned, gave him an excuse to travel where and when he needed as a member of a covert group whose true profession was to protect the Lord Rawl from unseen plots and threats. Speaking in a low voice, Jensen leaned closer to Kaylin. "Vultures can tell you from a great distance where a kill lies. By the way they circle and gather, I mean. I guess I can see how the races could be like that, birds that somehow could spot from afar in order to know there was something below.
Kaylin didn't say anything. Her head ached. She was hungry, and she just wanted to go to sleep, not to discuss things she couldn't answer. She wondered how many times Richard had viewed her own insistent questions in the same way she now viewed Jensen's. Kaylin silently vowed to try to be at least half as patient as Richard always was.
"The thing is," Jensen went on matter-of-factly, "how would someone get birds to, well, you know, circle around you like vultures over a carcass in order to know where you were?"
Jensen leaned in again and whispered, so as to be sure that Richard wouldn't hear,
"Maybe they're sent with magic to follow specific people."
Kara fixed Jensen with a murderous glare. Kaylin idly wondered if the moored Sith would clobber Richard's sister or extend her leniency because she was family. Discussions about magic, especially in the context of its danger to Richard or Kaylin, made Kara testy. Moored Sith were fearless in the face of death, but they did not like magic and weren't shy about making their distaste clear. In a way, such hostility toward magic characterized the nature and purpose of moored Sith. They were singularly able to appropriate the gifted's power and use it to destroy them. Moored Sith had been mercilessly trained to be ruthless at their task. It was from the madness of this duty that Richard had freed them. It seemed obvious enough to Kaylin, though, that if the races really were tracking them, it would have to involve conjuring of some sort. It was the questions raised by that assumption that so worried her. When Kaylin didn't debate the theory, Jensen asked, "Why do you think someone would be using the races to track you?" Kaylin lifted an eyebrow at the young woman. "Jensen, we're in the middle of the old world. Being hunted in enemy territory is hardly surprising."
"I guess you're right," Jensen admitted. "It just seems that there would have to be more to it."
Despite the heat, she rubbed her arms as if a chill had just run through her.
"You have no idea how much Emperor Jagang wants to catch you."
Kaylin smiled to herself. "Oh, I think I do." Jensen watched Richard a moment as he filled the buckets with water from barrels carried in the wagon. Richard leaned down and handed one to Friedrich. Ears turned attentively ahead. The horses all watched, eager for a drink. Betty, also watching as her twin suckled, bleated her longing for a drink. After filling the buckets, Richard submerged his water skin to fill it too. Jensen shook her head and looked again into Kaylin's eyes.
"Emperor Jagang tricked me into thinking Richard wanted me dead."
She glanced briefly over at the men engaged in their work before she went on.
"I was there with Jagang when he attacked Adendril."
Kaylin felt as if her heart came up in her throat at hearing firsthand confirmation of that brute invading the place where she'd grown up. She didn't think she could bear to hear the answer, but she had to ask. "Did he destroy the city?" After Richard had been captured and taken from her, Kaylin, with Kara at her side, had led the Daharan army against Jagang's vast invading horde from the old world. Month after month, Kaylin and the army fought against impossible odds, retreating all the way up through the Midlands. By the time they lost the battle for the Midlands, it had been over a year since Kaylin had seen Richard. He had seemingly been cast into oblivion. When at last she learned where he was being held, Kaylin and Kara had raced south to the old world, only to arrive just as Richard ignited a firestorm of revolution in the heart of Jagang's homeland. Before she'd left, Kaylin had evacuated Adendril and left the Confessor's Palace empty of all those who called it home. Life, not a place, was what mattered.
"He never got a chance to destroy the city," Jensen said. "When we arrived at the Confessor's Palace, Emperor Jagang thought he had you and Richard cornered. But out in front waited a spear holding the head of the Emperor's revered spiritual leader, Brother Narev."
Her voice lowered meaningfully.
"Jagang found the message left with the head."
Kaylin remembered well the day Richard had sent the head of that evil man, along with a message for Jagang, on the long journey north. "Compliments of Richard Rawl."
"That's right," Jensen said. "You can't imagine Jagang's rage."
She paused to be certain Kaylin heeded her warning.
"He'll do anything to get his hands on you and Richard."
Kaylin hardly needed Jensen to tell her how much Jagang wanted them.
All the more reason to get away, hide somewhere, Kara said.
And the races?
Kalin reminded her.
Kara cast a suggestive look at Jensen before speaking in a quiet voice to Kalin.
If we do something about the rest of it, maybe that problem would go away too.
Kara's goal was to protect Richard. She would be perfectly happy to put him in a hole somewhere and board him over if she thought doing so would keep harm from reaching him.
Jensen waited, watching the two of them. Kalin wasn't at all sure there was anything Jensen could do.
Richard had thought it over and had come to have serious doubts. Kalin had been amply skeptical without Richard's doubts. Still,
maybe, was all she said.
If there's anything I can do, I want to try it.
Jensen fussed with a button on the front of her dress.
Richard doesn't think I can help. If it involves magic, wouldn't he know? Richard is a wizard. He would know about magic.
Kalin sighed. There was so much more to it. Richard was raised in Westland, far from the Midlands, even farther from Dahara. He grew up in isolation from the rest of the New World, never knowing anything at all about the gift. Despite all he's so far learned and some of the remarkable things he's accomplished, he still knows very little of his birthright.
They had already told Jensen this, but she seemed skeptical, as if she suspected there was a certain amount of exaggeration in what they were telling her about Richard's unfamiliarity with his own gift. Her big brother had, after all, in one day, rescued her from a lifetime of terror. Such a profound awakening probably seemed tangled in magic to one so devoid of it.
Perhaps it was.
Well, if Richard is as ignorant of magic as you say, Jensen pressed in a meaningful voice, finally having arrived at the heart of her purpose, then maybe we shouldn't worry so much about what he thinks. Maybe we should just not tell him and go ahead and do whatever it is Kara wants me to do to fix your problem and get the races off your backs.
Nearby, Betty contentedly licked clean her little white twins. The sweltering darkness and vast weight of the surrounding silence seemed as eternal as death itself.
Kalin gently took a hold of Jensen's collar.
I grew up walking the corridors of the Wizard's Keep and the Confessor's Palace. I know a lot about magic.
She pulled the young woman closer.
I can tell you that such naive notions, when applied to ominous matters like this, can easily get people killed. There is always the possibility that it's as simple as you fancy, but most likely it's complex beyond your imagination, and any rash attempt at a remedy could ignite a conflagration that would consume us all. Added to that is the grave peril of not knowing how someone such as yourself, someone so pristinely ungifted as to be forewarned of in that ancient book Richard has, might affect the equation. There are times when there is no choice but to act immediately. Even then, it must be with your best judgment, using all your experience and everything you do know. As long as there's a choice, though, you don't act in matters of magic until you can be sure of the consequence. You don't ever just take a stab in the dark.
Kalin knew all too well the terrible truth of such an admonition.
Jensen seemed unconvinced.
But if he really doesn't know much about magic, his fears might only be, I've walked through dead cities, walked among the mutilated bodies of men, women, and children the Imperial Order has left in their wake. I've seen young women not as old as you make thoughtless, innocent mistakes and end up chained to a stake to be used by gangs of soldiers for days before being tortured to death just for the amusement of men who get sick pleasure out of raping a woman as she's in the throes of death.
Kalin gritted her teeth as memories flashed mercilessly before her mind's eye. She tightened her grip on Jensen's collar.
All of my sister confessors died in such a fashion, and they knew about their power and how to use it. The men who caught them knew, too, and used that knowledge against them. My closest girlhood friend died in my arms after such men were finished with her. Life means nothing to people like that. They worship death. Those are the kind of people who butchered your mother. Those are the kind of people who will have us, too, if we make a mistake. Those are the kind of people laying traps for us, including traps constructed of magic. As for Richard not knowing about magic, there are times when he is so ignorant of the simplest things that I can scarcely believe it, and must remind myself that he grew up not being taught anything at all about his gift. In those things, I try to be patient and to guide him as best I can. He takes very seriously what I tell him.
There are other times when I suspect that he actually grasps complexities of magic that neither I nor anyone alive has ever before fathomed or even so much as imagined. In those things, he must be his own guide. The lives of a great many good people depend on us not making careless mistakes, especially careless mistakes with magic. As the mother confessor, I'll not allow reckless whim to jeopardize all those lives. Now, do you understand me? Kaylin had nightmares about the things she had seen, about those who had been caught, about those who had made a simple mistake and paid the price with their life. She was not many years beyond Jensen's age, but right then that gulf was vastly more than a mere handful of years. Kaylin gave Jensen's collar a sharp yank. Do you understand me? Wide-eyed, Jensen swallowed.
Yes, Mother Confessor.
Finally, her gaze broke toward the ground. Only then did Kaylin release her. Chapter 4. Anyone hungry? Tom called to the three women. Richard pulled a lantern from the wagon and, after finally getting it lit with the steel and flint, set it on a shelf of rock. He passed a suspicious look among the three women as they approached, but apparently thought better of saying anything. As Kaylin sat close at Richard's side, Tom offered him the first chunk he sliced from a long length of sausage. When Richard declined, Kaylin accepted it. Tom sliced off another piece and passed it to Kara, and then another to Friedrich. Jensen had gone to the wagon to search through her pack. Kaylin thought maybe she just wanted to be alone a moment to collect herself. Kaylin knew how harsh her words had sounded, but she couldn't allow herself to do Jensen the disservice of coddling her with pleasing lies. With Jensen reassuringly close by, Betty lay down beside Rusty, Jensen's red roan mare. The horse and the goat were fast friends. The other horses seemed pleased by the visitor and took keen interest in her two kids, giving them a good sniff when they came close enough. When Jensen walked over, displaying a small piece of carrot, Betty rose up in a rush. Her tail went into a blur of expectant wagging. The horses whinnied and tossed their heads, hoping not to be left out. Each in turn received a small treat and a scratch behind the ears. Had they a fire, they could have cooked a stew, rice or beans, griddled some bannock, or maybe have made a nice soup. Despite how hungry she was, Kaylin didn't think she would have had the energy to cook, so she was content to settle for what was at hand. Jensen retrieved strips of dried meat from her pack, offering them around. Richard declined this, too, instead eating hard travel biscuits, nuts, and dried fruit. "But don't you want any meat?" Jensen asked as she sat down on her bedroll opposite him. "You need more than that to eat. You need something substantial." "I can't eat meat, not since the gift came to life in me." Jensen wrinkled her nose with a puzzled look. "Why would your gift not allow you to eat meat?" Richard leaned to the side, resting his weight on an elbow, as he momentarily surveyed the sweep of stars, searching for the words to explain. "Balance in nature," he said at last, "is a condition resulting from the interaction of all things in existence. On a simple level, look at how predators and prey are in balance. If there were too many predators, and the prey were all eaten, then the thriving predators, too, would end up starving and dying out. The lack of balance would be deadly to both prey and predator. The world for them both would end. They exist in balance because acting in accordance with their nature results in balance. Balance is not their conscious intent. People are different. Without our conscious intent, we don't necessarily achieve the balance that our survival often requires. We must learn to use our minds to think if we are to survive. We plant crops, we hunt for fur to keep us warm, or raise sheep and gather their wool and learn how to weave it into cloth. We have to learn how to build shelter. We balance the value of one thing against another and trade goods to exchange what we've made for what we need that others have made or grown or built or woven or hunted. We balance what we need with what we know of the realities of the world. We balance what we want against our rational self-interest, not against fulfilling a momentary impulse, because we know that our long-term survival requires it. We use wood to build a fire in the hearth in order to keep us from freezing on a winter night, but despite how cold we might be when we're building the fire, we don't build the fire too big.
knowing that to do so would risk burning our shelter down after we're warm and asleep. But people also act out of short-sighted selfishness, greed, and lust for power. They destroy lives.
Jensen lifted her arm out toward the darkness. Look at what the Imperial Order is doing and succeeding at. They don't care about weaving wool or building houses or trading goods. They slaughter people just for conquest. They take what they want,
and we resist them. We've learned to understand the value of life, so we fight to reestablish reason. We are the balance.
Jensen hooked some of her hair behind an ear. What does all this have to do with not eating meat?
I was told that wizards, too, must balance themselves, their gift, their power, in the things they do. I fight against those, like the Imperial Order, who would destroy life because it has no value to them, but that requires that I do the same terrible thing by destroying what is my highest value, life. Since my gift has to do with being a warrior, abstinence from eating meat is believed to be the balance for the killing I'm forced to do.
What happens if you eat meat?
Kaelin knew that Richard had cause, from only the day before, to need the balance of not eating meat. Even the idea of eating meat nauseates me. I've done it when I've had to, but it's something I avoid if at all possible. Magic deprived of balance has grave consequences, just like building a fire in the hearth.
The thought occurred to Kaelin that Richard carried the Sword of Truth, and perhaps that weapon also imposed its own need for balance.
Richard had been rightly named the Seeker of Truth by the first wizard himself, Zedekus Zul-Zorander, Zed, Richard's grandfather, the man who had helped raise him, and from whom Richard had additionally inherited the gift. Richard's gift had been passed down not only from the Rawl bloodline, but the Zorander as well. Balance, indeed.
Rightly named Seekers had been carrying that very same sword for nearly 3,000 years. Perhaps Richard's understanding of the need for balance had helped him to survive the things he'd faced. With her teeth, Jensen tugged off a strip of dried meat as she thought it over.
So, because you have to fight and sometimes kill people, you can't eat meat as the balance for that terrible act?
Richard nodded as he chewed dried apricots.
It must have been dreadful to have such a gift,
Jensen said in a quiet voice.
To have something so destructive that it requires you to balance it in some way.
She looked away from Richard's gray eyes. Kaelin knew what a difficult experience it sometimes was to meet his direct and incisive gaze. I used to feel that way, he said, when I first was named the Seeker and given the sword, and even more so later when I learned that I had the gift. I didn't want to have the gift, didn't want the things the gift could do. Just as I hadn't wanted the sword because of the things in me that I thought shouldn't ever be brought out.
But now you don't mind as much, having the sword or the gift?
You have a knife and have used it. Richard leaned toward her, holding out his hands. You have hands. Do you hate your knife? Or hands?
Of course not. But what does that have to do with having the gift?
Having the gift is simply how I was born. Like being born male or female, or with blue or brown or green eyes, or with two hands. I don't hate my hands because I could potentially strangle someone with them. It's my mind that directs my hands. My hands don't act of their own accord. To think so is to ignore the truth of what each thing is, its true nature. You have to recognize the truth of things if you're to achieve balance, or come to truly understand anything for that matter.
Kaelin wondered why she didn't require balance the way Richard did. Why was it so vital for him but not for her?
Despite how much she wanted to go to sleep, she couldn't keep silent.
I often use my confessor's power for that same end, to kill, and I don't have to keep in balance by not eating meat.
The Sisters of the Light claim that the veil that separates the world of the living from the world of the dead is maintained through magic. More precisely, they claim that the veil is here, Richard said, tapping the side of his temple. In those of us who have the gift, wizards, and to a lesser extent, sorceresses. They claim that balance for those of us making the gift is essential because in us, within our gift, resides the veil, making us in essence the guardians of the veil, the balance between worlds. Maybe they're right. I have both sides of the gift, additive and subtractive. Maybe that makes it different for me. Maybe having both sides makes it more important than usual for me to keep my gift in balance.
Kaelin wondered just how much of that might be true. She feared to think how extensively the balance of magic itself had been altered by her doing. The world was unraveling, in more ways than one, but there had been no choice. Kara dismissively waggled a piece of dried meat before them. All this balance business is just a message from the good spirits, in that other world, telling Lord Rawl to leave such fighting to us. If he did, then he wouldn't have to worry about balance, or what he can and can't eat. If he would stop putting himself in mortal danger, then his balance would be just fine and he could eat a whole goat. Jensen's eyebrows went up. "You know what I mean," Kara grumbled. Tom leaned in.
"Maybe Mistress Kara is right, Lord Rawl. You have people to protect you. You should let them do it, and you could better put your abilities to the task of being the Lord Rawl."
Richard closed his eyes and rubbed his temples with his fingertips.
"If I had to wait for Kara to save me all the time, I'm afraid I'd have to do without a head."
Kara rolled her eyes at his wisp of a smile and went back to her sausage. Studying his face in the dim light as he sucked on a small bite of dried biscuit, Kaelin thought that Richard didn't look well, and that it was more than simply being exhausted. The soft glow of light from the lantern lit one side of his face, leaving the rest in darkness, as if he were only half there, half in this world and half in the world of darkness, as if he were the veil between. She leaned close and brushed back the hair that had fallen across his forehead, using the excuse to feel his brow. He felt hot, but they were all hot and sweating, so she couldn't really tell if he had a fever, but she didn't think so. Her hand slipped down to cup his face, kindling his smile. She thought she could lose herself in the pleasure of just looking at his face. It made her heart ache with joy to see his smile. She smiled back, a smile she gave no one but him. Kaelin had an urge to kiss him, too, but there always seemed to be people around, and the kind of kiss she really wanted to give him wasn't the kind of kiss you gave in front of others.
"It seems hard to imagine," Friedrich said to Richard. "I mean, the Lord Rawl himself not knowing about the gift as he grew up."
Friedrich shook his head.
"It seems hard to believe."
"My grandfather Zed has the gift," Richard said as he leaned back. "He wanted to help raise me away from magic, much like Jensen, hidden away where Dark and Rawl couldn't get at me. That's why he wanted me raised in Westland, on the other side of the boundary from magic."
"And even your grandfather, a wizard, never let on that he was gifted?"
Tom asked.
"No, not until Kaelin came to Westland. Looking back on it, I realized that there were a lot of little things that told me he was more than he seemed, but growing up I never knew. He just always seemed wizardly to me in the sense that he seemed to know about everything in the world around us. He opened up that world for me, making me want to all the time know more. But the gift wasn't ever the magic he showed me. Life was what he showed me."
"It's really true, then," Friedrich said, "that Westland was set aside to be a place without magic?"
Richard smiled at the mention of his home of Westland. "It is. I grew up in the Heartland Woods, right near the boundary, and I never saw magic. Except maybe for Chase."
"Chase?"
Tom asked. "A friend of mine, a boundary warden. Fellow about your size, Tom. Whereas you served to protect the Lord Rawl, Chase's charge was the boundary, or rather keeping people away from it. He told me that his job was keeping away the prey, people, so that the things that come out of the boundary wouldn't get any stronger. He worked to maintain balance." Richard smiled to himself. "He didn't have the gift, but I often thought that the things that man could pull off had to be magic."
Friedrich, too, was smiling at Richard's story.
"I lived in Dahara all my life. When I was young, those men who guarded the boundary were my heroes, and I wanted to join them."
"Why didn't you?" Richard asked.
"When the boundary went up, I was too young."
Friedrich stared off into memories, then sought to change the subject.
"How much longer until we get out of this wasteland, Lord Rawl?"
Richard looked east, as if he could see off into the black of night beyond the dim circle of lantern light.
"If we keep up our pace, a few more days and we'll be out of the worst of it, I'd say. It gets rockier now as the ground continues to rise up toward the distant mountains. The traveling will be more difficult, but at least as we get higher, it shouldn't be quite so hot."
"How far to this thing that Kara thinks I should touch?"
Jensen asked.
Richard studied her face a moment.
I'm not sure that's a good idea.
But we are going there?
Yes.
Jensen picked at the strip of dried meat. What is this thing that Kara touched, anyway? Kara and Kalin don't seem to want to tell me.
I asked them not to tell you, Richard said.
But why? If we're going to see it, then why wouldn't you want to tell me what it is?
Because you don't have the gift, Richard said. I don't want to influence what you see.
Jensen blinked. What difference could that make?
I haven't had the time to translate much of it yet, but from what I gather from the book Friedrich brought me, even those who don't have the gift in the common sense have at least some tiny spark of it. In that way, they are able to interact with the magic in the world, much like you must be born with eyes to see color. Being born with eyes, you can see and understand a grand painting, even though you may not have the ability to create such a painting yourself. The gifted Lord Rawl gives birth to only one gifted heir. He may have other children, but rarely are any of them ever also gifted. Still, they do have this infinitesimal spark, as does everyone else. Even they, so to speak, can see color. The book says, though, that there are rare offspring of a gifted Lord Rawl like you who are born devoid of any trace whatsoever of the gift. The book calls them pillars of creation. Much like those born without eyes can't perceive color, those born like you can't perceive magic. But even that is imprecise, because with you it's more than simply not perceiving magic. For someone born blind, color exists, they just aren't able to see it. For you, though, it isn't that you simply can't perceive magic. For you, magic does not exist. It isn't a reality.
How is such a thing possible? Jensen asked.
I don't know, Richard said. When our ancestors created the bond of the Lord Rawl to the Daharan people, it carried the unique ability to consistently bear a gifted heir. Magic needs balance. Maybe they had to make it work like this, have this counter of those born like you, in order for the magic they created to work. Maybe they didn't realize what would happen and inadvertently created the balance.
Jensen cleared her throat. What would happen if, if I were to have children?
Richard surveyed Jensen's eyes for what seemed a painfully long time. You would bear offspring like you.
Jensen sat forward, her hands reflecting her emotional entreaty. Even if I marry someone with that spark of the gift? Someone able to perceive color, as you called it? Even then my child would be like me?
Even then, and every time, Richard said with quiet certitude. You are a broken link in the chain of the gift. According to the book, once the line of all those born with the spark of the gift, including those with the gift as it is in me, going back thousands of years, going back forever, is broken. It is broken for all time. It cannot be restored. Once forfeited in such a marriage, no descendant of that line can ever restore the link to the gift. When these children marry, they too would be as you, breaking the chain in the line of those they marry. Their children would be the same, and so on. That's why the Lord Rawl always hunted down ungifted offspring and eliminated them. You would be the genesis of something the world has never had before, those untouched by the gift. Every offspring of every descendant would end the line of that spark of the gift in everyone they married. The world, mankind, would be changed forever. This is the reason the book calls those like you pillars of creation. The silence seemed brittle.
And that's what this place is called, too, Tom said as he pointed a thumb back over his shoulder, seeming to feel the need to say something into the quiet. The pillars of creation. He looked at the faces surrounding the weak light coming from the sputtering lantern. Seems a strange coincidence that both those like Jensen and this place would be called the same thing.
Richard stared off into the darkness toward that terrible place where Kalin would have died had he made a mistake with the magic involved. I don't think it's a coincidence. They are connected somehow. The book, The Pillars of Creation, describing those born like Jensen, was written in the ancient language High Daharan. Few people still living understood High Daharan. Richard had begun to learn it in order to unravel important information in other books they'd found that were from the time of the Great War. That war, extinguished 3,000 years before, had somehow ignited once again and was burning uncontrolled through the world. Kalin feared to think of the central,
if inadvertent part she and Richard had played in making it possible. Jensen leaned in as if looking for some thread of hope.
How do you think the two might be connected?
Richard let out a tired sigh.
I don't know yet.
With a finger, Jensen rolled a pebble around in a small circle, leaving a tiny rut in the dust.
All of those things about me being a pillar of creation, being the break in the link of the gift, makes me feel somehow dirty.
Dirty? Tom asked, looking hurt to hear her even suggest such a thing. Jensen, why would you feel that way?
Those like me are also called holes in the world. I guess I can see why now.
Richard leaned forward, resting his elbows on his knees. I know what it's like to feel regret for how you were born, for what you have or don't have. I hated being born the way I was with the gift, but I came to realize how senseless such feelings are, how completely wrong it was to think that way.
But it's different with me, she said as she pushed at the sand with a finger, erasing the little ruts she'd made with a pebble. There are others like you wizards or sorceresses with a gift. Everyone else can at least see colors, as you put it. I'm the only one like this.
Richard gazed at his half-sister, a beautiful, bright, ungifted half-sister that any previous Lord Rawl would have murdered on the spot, and was overcome with a radiant smile. Jensen, I think of you as born pure. You're like a new snowflake, different than any other, and startlingly beautiful. Looking up at him, Jensen was overcome with a smile of her own.
I never thought of it that way.
Her smile withered as she thought about his words.
But still, I'd be destroying.
You would be creating, not destroying, Richard said. Magic exists. It cannot possess the right to exist. To think so would be to ignore the true nature, the reality of things. People, if they don't take the lives of others, have the right to live their life. You can't say that because you were born with red hair, you supplanted the right of brown hair to be born on your head. Jensen giggled at such a concept. It was good to see the smile taking firmer hold. By the look on Tom's face, he agreed.
So, Jensen finally asked, what about this thing we're going to see?
If the thing Kara touched has been altered by someone with the gift, then since you can't see the magic, you might see something we can't see. What lies beneath that magic? Jensen rubbed the edge of her boot heel.
And you think that will tell you something important?
I don't know. It may be useful, or it may not. But I want to know what you see, with your special vision, without any suggestion from us.
If you're so worried about it, why did you leave it? Aren't you afraid someone might come across it and take it?
I worry about a lot of things, Richard said.
Even if it really is something altered by magic and she sees it for what it truly is, Kara said, that doesn't mean that it still isn't what it seems to us, or that it isn't just as dangerous.
Richard nodded. At least we'll know that much more about it. Anything we learn might help us in some way. Kara scowled. I just want her to turn it back over. Richard gave her a look designed to keep her from saying anything else about it. Kara huffed, leaned in, and took one of Richard's dried apricots. She scowled at him as she popped the apricot in her mouth. As soon as supper was finished, Jensen suggested that they all pack the food safely back in the wagon so that Betty wouldn't help herself to it in the night. Betty was always hungry. At least with her two kids, she now had a taste of what it was like to be badgered for food. Kaelin thought that Friedrich should be given consideration because of his age, so she asked him if he'd like to take the first watch. First watch was easier than being awakened in the middle of the night to stand watch between stretches of sleep. He smiled his appreciation as he nodded his agreement. After opening his and Kaelin's bedroll, Richard doused the lantern. The night was sweltering but crystal clear, so that after Kaelin's eyes adjusted, the sweep of stars was enough to see by, if not very well. One of the white twins thought the newly unfurled bedrolls would be a perfect place to romp. Kaelin scooped up the leggy bundle and returned it to its tail-wagging mother. As she lay down beside Richard, Kaelin saw the dark shape of Jensen curl up by Betty and collect the twins in the tender bed of her arms, where they quickly settled down. Richard leaned over and gently kissed Kaelin's lips. I love you, you know.
If we're ever alone, Lord Rawl,
Kaelin whispered back. I'd like to have more than a quick kiss. He laughed softly and kissed her forehead before lying on his side away from her. She had been expecting an intimate promise, or at least a light-hearted remark. Kaelin curled up behind him and rested a hand on his shoulder.
Richard?
She whispered. Are you all right? It took him longer to answer than she would have liked. I have a splitting headache. She wanted to ask what kind of headache, but she didn't want the tiny spark of fear she harbored to gain the glow of credence by voicing it aloud. It's different from the headaches I've had before, Richard said, as if in answer to her thoughts. I suppose it's this wicked heat on top of not having had any sleep for so long.
I suppose.
Kaelin bunched up the blanket she was using for a pillow to make a lump that would press against the sore spot at the base of her skull. The heat is making my head pound, too. She gently rubbed the back of his shoulder.
Have a good sleep, then.
She was exhausted and aching all over, and it felt delicious to lie down. Her head felt better, too, with a soft lump of blanket pressed against the back of her neck. With her hand resting against the back of Richard's shoulder, feeling his slow breathing, Kaelin fell into a dead sleep. Chapter 5. As tired as she was, it was a marvelous sensation being beside Richard and letting herself go, letting her concerns and worries go for the time being and so effortlessly sinking into sleep. But the sleep seemed only just started when she woke to find Kara gently shaking her shoulder. Kaelin blinked up at the familiar silhouette standing over her. She ached to go back to sleep, to be left alone, to be so wonderfully asleep again.
My watch?
Kaelin asked. Kara nodded. I'll stand it if you like. Kaelin glanced over her shoulder as she sat up, seeing that Richard was still fast asleep.
No,
she whispered.
You get some sleep. You need rest, too.
Kaelin yawned and stretched her back. She took Kara's elbow and pulled her a short distance away, out of earshot, and leaned close.
I think you're right. There's more than enough of us to stand watch and all still get enough rest. Let's let Richard sleep till morning.
Kara smiled her agreement before heading for her bedroll. Conspiracy designed to protect Richard suited the Mord Sith. Kaelin yawned and stretched again, at the same time forcing herself to shake the lingering haze of sleep from her mind, to be alert. Pulling her hair back from her face and flipping it over her shoulder, she scanned the wasteland all around, looking for anything out of the ordinary. Everything beyond their camp was as still as death. Mountains blacked out the glittering sweep of stars in a jagged line all the way around the horizon. Kaelin took careful assessment of everyone, making sure they were all accounted for. Kara already looked comfortable. Tom slept not far from the horses. Friedrich was asleep on the other side of the horses. Jensen was curled up beside Betty, but by her movements, the way she turned from her side to her back, didn't look asleep. The babies had moved and now lay sprawled with their heads butted up tight against their mother. Kaelin was always especially vigilant right at the change of watch. Change of watch was a prime time for attack. She knew, for she had often initiated raids around change of watch. Those just going off watch were often tired and already thinking of other things, considering watch the duty of the next guard. Those just coming on watch were often not mentally prepared for a sudden attack. People tended to think that the enemy would not come until they were properly settled in and on lookout. Victory favored those who were ready. Defeat stalked those who were unwary. Kaelin made her way to a formation of rock not far from Richard. She scooted back, sitting atop a high spot in order to get a better view of the lifeless surroundings. Even in the middle of the night, the rough rock still radiated the fierce heat of the previous day. Kaelin pulled a skein of damp hair from her neck, wishing there were a breeze. There had been times in winter when she had nearly frozen to death. Try as she might, she couldn't seem to recall what it felt like to be truly cold. It wasn't long after Kaelin had gotten herself situated before she saw Jensen get up and step quietly through their camp, trying not to wake the others.
"All right if I sit with you?"
she asked when she finally reached Kaelin. "Of course." Jensen pushed her bottom back up onto a rock beside Kaelin, pulled her knees up, and wrapped her arms around them, hugging them close to her body. For a time, she just gazed out at the night.
"Kaelin, I'm sorry. About before?"
Despite the dark,
Kaylin thought she could see that the young woman looked miserable.
I didn't mean to sound like a fool who would do something without thinking. I'd never do anything to hurt any of you.
I know you wouldn't deliberately do any such thing. It's the things you might do unwittingly that concern me.
Jensen nodded.
I think I understand a little better now about how complicated everything is and how much I really don't know. I'll not do anything unless you or Richard tells me to, I promise.
Kaylin smiled and ran a hand down the back of Jensen's head, letting it come to rest on her shoulder.
I only told you those things because I care about you, Jensen.
She gave the shoulder a compassionate squeeze.
I guess I'm worried for you the same way Betty worries for her innocent twins, knowing the dangers all around when they rarely do.
You need to understand that if you go out on thin ice, it doesn't matter if the lake was frozen over by a cold spell or a magic spell. If you don't know where you're stepping, so to speak, you could fall into the dark, cold arms of death. It matters not what made the ice. Dead is dead. My point is, you don't go out on that thin ice unless you have a very powerful need, because it very well could cost you your life.
But I'm not touched by magic, like Richard said. I'm like someone born without eyes who can't see color. I'm a broken link in the chain of magic. Wouldn't that mean that I can't accidentally get into trouble with it?
And if someone pushes a boulder off a cliff and it crushes you, does it matter if that boulder was sent crashing over the edge by a man with a lever or by a sorceress wielding the gift?
Jensen's voice took on a troubled tone.
I see what you mean. I guess that I never looked at it that way. I'm only trying to help you because I know how easy it is to make a mistake.
She watched Kaylin in the dark for a moment.
You know about magic. What kind of mistake could you make?
All kinds.
Like what?
Kaylin stared off into the memories. I once delayed for half a second in killing someone.
But I thought you said that it was wrong to be too rash.
Sometimes the most foolhardy thing you can do is to delay. She was a sorceress. By the time I acted, it was already too late. Because of my mistake, she captured Richard and took him away. For a year, I didn't know what had happened to him. I thought I would never see him again, that I would die of heartache.
Jensen stared in astonishment.
When did you find him again?
Not long ago. That's why we're down here in the old world. She brought him here.
At least I found him. I've made other mistakes, and they too have resulted in no end of trouble. So has Richard. Like he said, we all make mistakes. If I can, I want to spare you from making a needless mistake, at least.
Jensen looked away.
Like believing in that man I was with yesterday? Sebastian? Because of him, my mother was murdered, and I almost got you killed. I feel like such a fool.
You didn't make that mistake out of carelessness, Jensen. They deceived you, used you. More importantly, in the end, you used your head and were willing to face the truth.
Jensen nodded.
What should we name the twins?
She finally asked.
Kaylin didn't think that naming the twins was a good idea, not yet anyway, but she was reluctant to say it.
I don't know. What names were you thinking?
Jensen let out a heavy breath.
It was a shock to suddenly have Betty back with me, and even more of a surprise to see that she had babies of her own. I never considered that before. I haven't even had time to think about a name.
You will.
Jensen smiled at the thought. Her smile grew, as if at the thought of something more.